Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
The Seahawks are on the board 2 weeks from today. Bump, we are only 2 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft. I cannot believe it. I know it's April 11th. Happy birthday, G. Scott, by the way. Lots of April birthdays in our office.
Justin, I realized Justin was the day before Curtis.
Happy birthday, Justin. Oh, I didn't say happy birthday to Justin in person. I'm sorry, Justin. I did say happy birthday to Curtis, then he stabbed me in the back, but I digress. We are moving on. It is a really, really exciting time to be a Seahawks fan because this is a team that has a new head coach, that has a GM with more control than he's ever had before. And I and many of you are curious to see in which direction they choose to go. The most common choices for them are in the trenches. Anytime I see a national expert talk about where they should draft, it's always the trenches. And you know what? Yeah, that continues today with our pick at number 16 for the Seahawks. We are going with Tavondre Sweat out of Texas. Now, this one's a little controversial, Bump. A little controversial.
We're all about controversy today, apparently.
All about controversy. The Seahawks are hosting him for a pre-draft workout despite a recent arrest for a DWI. Now, again, you and I briefly, when this news happened, talked about, well, if you were a scout with the Seahawks, what would you want to ask Sweat? And I'm sure that we'll cover those questions. But tell us about Sweat the player before we get to some of this other stuff.
Mr. Sweat, 6'4", 366 pounds. Senior year, he had 25 tackles, 28 pressures, 23 QB hurries, some QB hits, a couple sacks. That's who he is when it comes to the stats. Now let's talk about him as a football player. This is a massive human being, 6'4", 366, you can imagine. He's a big, big body. And when you play that zero and that one tech, you have to have a big body. You have to be good against the double teams. The more film I watch on this guy, the more he understands, obviously, being the one tech, you're going to get double team. But he also knows how to split them and not get too much penetration in the backfield. Sometimes when you are that one tech, you got the guard blocking down on you. You got the center blocking down on you. You want to split them, and then you get in the backfield. The running back makes a move, then it's all bad. You want to have gap integrity. And at 6'4", 366, he might be able to take up two of them things, two gaps. But let's talk more about him as a football player. His technique is on point. I'm watching him, and let's say he has a slant to the right. The offensive line is also stepping to his right. He knows he has to take care of that A-gap. What he does a good job of doing, if he is on the center's left side, he'll step into that gap, hold the center with his left shoulder and left arm, and keep that right arm free so he's still able to make a tackle. A lot of the time, guys get engaged, get both hands on the center or on the guard, and now you're done. You can't make the tackle. He understands that, look, I have to use technique. Now, once he makes that step, he gets low because he is 6'3", and a lot of these offensive linemen are a bit bigger than him. He gets low, and he stays there. So he plays with good pad level. Mm-hmm. He understands technique, and he's patient in the backfield. He doesn't just jump in the backfield and try to make a play. Though he does have some TFLs. Another thing I see, this kid is relentless, man. When the ball is snapped, he is going. If there's a screen to the right, he's running all the way to the right. If there's a screen to the right and it's a throwback to the left, he's going to the right, he's going to the left. He is running to the football. 11 hats to the ball. That's what coaches always want to see. When you watch him play, he understands what he's looking at as well. And when I say understands what he's looking at, that means that he knows if the line is flowing to the right, they're running a zone right, bam, I can put my hands on that guard on that center, help him flow to the right, nice little swim move, and I'm still in my gap. He's not panicking. He understands if I see a guard pull or a tackle pull, what they're trying to accomplish, and he adjusts his hands and his feet accordingly. He has good balance. He's very relentless, and he can go. Again, he's a guy at a position to where you're not going to be able to watch the film or watch your regular game and really understand his impact unless you zone in on him. Most people just watch the football. He's exactly what you want when it comes to interior alignment. You got to be okay with the double teams. He can do that. You have to be smart with your leverage and your hands. He can do that too. Has a great swim move, but will power you and run through you as well. You also have to understand that you can get in the backfield, but if you're just flying in the backfield, you're getting 3, 4, 5 yards deep, the running back's going to make a move on you, and you're done. Looks like a well-coached kid. Looks like a guy who understands his role and takes a lot of pride in it.
Okay, before we get to weaknesses and before we get to some character questions in some of the red, orange, yellow flags to come up with Tavondre. Let's continue to talk about those strengths and talk about him as a fit for the Seattle Seahawks. If you're John Schneider, if you're Mike McDonald, you're looking at your defense and where you need help. And one of the things that you and I have always heard is you need violence and you need dudes. Like, I remember, Bump, that when they transitioned from a 4-3 to a 3-4, one of the things that I always heard was they just don't have the guys to be able to have the defense that they want. Is this a guy that solves one of those problems for you?
Yeah, he is. Again, he's a guy who... it's just going to take up space. Honestly, if you are looking at a one tech, zero, three tech, it's either they control one gap, you two gap them, but they're taking up space. They're occupying bodies, and they're okay with that. They understand if I can occupy two offensive linemen, my linebackers are going to eat. When I have my opportunity, I can get in the backfield and I can make plays. A interior lineman, defensive lineman, it works in any offense or defense. I don't care what you're running. 3-4, 4-3, 33 stack, it don't matter. You need hogs in the middle to two gap if you ask them to, or to take on these double teams and let the guys behind them eat.
Is there anyone on this team that they have now that could do the job that he does? Or is this a guy where if you pass on him, and again, I don't know that he'll go at 16, but let's say you trade back and you don't take this guy, are you really missing out on an opportunity to get that player?
I mean, I think you have guys on this roster already that are capable of doing it, right? I mean, you know, the one position where there was absolutely nobody was a linebacker spot, and they took care of that fairly quickly. But I think Jay Reed can do it. He's shown that he can do it. He's put together some great years. Obviously, we talk about Leonard Williams. He can do that as well. Behind them, we're still waiting to see what Cameron Young looks like. Was drafted last year. Didn't get too many snaps, so there's some depth there. I think with Jay Reed and Leonard Williams, you're good to go. I think that now it's about depth. And Cam Young will provide that out of Mississippi State, I believe, last year. And then you're looking for a young man like Sweat to do it as well. Now, chances are they probably don't get Sweat, but we're just talking about possibilities at number 16.
Well, and again, we're also exploring the possibility of, like, their first picks. So Sweat isn't projected to go at 16. We're looking at him as who's the Seahawks' first pick. Maybe they trade back.
Yeah, exactly. And this is profile stuff, just for your edumacation.
Yeah.
But, I can see him playing that spot. It's not like they're looking at – because last year coming into the season, I'm looking at the interior and I'm going – you need a guy to play right now. So they draft Cam Young, and I'm excited about it. But then Jay Reed comes back, and you find Leonard Williams. And I think that's the perfect scenario for Cam Young because now he can develop even more. Didn't get a lot of snaps last year. You're good. Same thing in this position. If Sweat were to come in, you don't need him right now. He's going to be in the rotation, but it's not like if he does not perform at an extremely high level, you have no other options.
All right, let's talk about some of those red flags and weaknesses. This is from the Athletics Draft Guide. A lot of it is about work ethic and personality. And in a way, that's a good thing, because if you can figure that out, if you can become more professional and take on more self-discipline, then you have all of the tools athletically to be able to succeed. The problem is, as you guys know, as I know, as you know, Bump, not every player does that. So the Athletic says, look, he needs to keep his weight under control. They have some, like, mechanics type things, like he tends to get off leads too early. Pass rush skills are a work in progress. He needs move-to-move transitions. But their big red flag is maturity. They said he showed improved maturity during this past season with Texas, and Texas really needed that because they were becoming a college playoff team. But he was labeled a party animal and class clown by NFL scouts who questioned his commitment to becoming the best player he could be.
That's why you ask questions all across campus.
What is
my guy like? Is he going out on a Thursday night? What's he doing? Is he trying to sneak out? Oh, my God. You want to hear a silly story?
Yes, I do.
Goodness gracious. So, at home games and at Washington State, we still stayed in town, but we went up to, I think it was called, like, the Hilltop Hotel. And the night before the game. And we have our travel suits that we wear on game days when we travel or even when we're at home. Tell me why. I'm a freshman. Three of my other freshmen snuck out the hotels and went to party in their warm-up gear, like their travel suit. I go, what are you doing? You're already 6'4", 300 pounds.
No.
They know you should be in the hotel, but yo, dumb,
you know
what?
Did they think that
what?
It would help them get girls if they were like,
they
look.
They weren't thinking at all. That's the problem. You, anyway, yeah, so... Yeah,
that's like walking around, mask off, no gloves, committing a crime, just like waving at the cameras.
So
hey,
stupid. So stupid.
I'm going to commit a crime, but I'm going to use my debit card and ID to do it.
But back to sweat. This is why you ask all the questions. You talk to as many people as possible. I've seen guys who are party animals and go to the league and play for 10 years and be fine. I'm not saying that that's something that you want to see in a guy that you're going to possibly invest millions of dollars in. You want to make sure that they have their priorities straight. But at what extent do you allow him to be a college student too? It's not like he's a quarterback. My quarterback, Alex Bring, he would hang out, but not like the way we were kicking it. He was like, I have a bit more responsibility than y'all. Have a couple drinks. Boom, I'm going back to the house. So there's a fine line of you are a college student or you are just raging every single weekend. Obviously, this seems to be an issue with him because he just got a DWI. So I think he might have hurt his draft stock a little bit, but he's going
to
get drafted.
Let's find out what one Broccoli Heward has to say about that DWI. Here's what he mentioned.
Man, you're 2.5 weeks away, right, from draft day. This is the biggest time of your life. We talked about this with Carter last year, leading up to the draft and some of the decisions to be overweight and sloppy and all of this. Come on, man, this is where people are, you know, butt up. This is where you're making your case as an employee for an employer to bring you in to be a part of it. The timing is horrendous. Horrendous. So not a good look. Does that mean some of that and he could fall into this draft? Was he a candidate for the Seahawks even beforehand? The one thing that I have learned in doing these draft profiles, I'll give you another one in an hour of an absolute stud that plays perfectly into this conversation, because where I have not necessarily missed, but for all those that try to put together these mock drafts and prognosticate, you don't know the injury history like these 32 teams do. Mm-hmm. You just don't. No matter how hard you sleuth, no matter how much you try to read, you have no idea of the amount of detail these guys have on the character, on the self-medication of many of these players, of the injury history of many of these players. And yeah, this is one that for Tavondre Sweat, the big D tackle who got the DWI over the weekend, it is going to hurt him in his future employer's eyes come draft day in 2.5 weeks.
I got to be honest, Bump. I completely agree with Brock. I think that context is always really important. This is not a DWI he got, when he was newly 21, still in college. This is a DWI he got when he should be on his absolute best behavior 2 weeks ahead of the draft.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part, because it's risk reward. Once you sign, you get your signing bonus. Let's say I'm not making an excuse for him, but say he signs, gets his signing bonus, and he's out celebrating. He's made it to the NFL. The first thing I did when I made it, I ain't going to get nowhere near the money he got, right? I didn't touch that type of money. I took the boys out and say, let's have a good time. I made it. It's like, we made it. Let's go chill and have a good time. I think the timing of it is huge. I mean, Brock said it. It's 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be locked in, focused, making sure your weight is on point, really just kicking it with a small circle. And if anything, you shouldn't be driving. You should not be driving. You have enough money. Right now, he has enough money to get a taxi or get an Uber or a Lyft. My agent gave me money before I got money. I'm sure his agent gave him money before he got money. It's the decision making that will deter some teams from taking a chance on him. But somebody is. He's a good football player. Somebody's going to do it.
And again, it's not that you can never, ever, ever make a mistake. And that is a very dangerous and potentially very dangerous and costly mistake that's cost people their lives or the lives of other people. It didn't in this case, thank goodness. It is a mistake that many other people have made, though. So I'm not pointing a finger saying you're a bad person. What I'm doing is saying, if I'm a scout, I'm wondering, well, if 2 weeks ahead of the draft, you are willing to party and not set up a way for you to safely leave this situation, how do I know you're not going to party before a game day? How do I know that, you know, if we go to a Super Bowl in the 2 weeks leading up to that, you aren't willing to put everything aside for this game and for this team? Like, those are the things that scouts are wondering. How do I know that when it really matters and everything's on the line, you aren't willing to put aside things that, you know, like, who doesn't love going to drink with friends? Now, no one should love driving while intoxicated, first of all. Always have a designated driver. Always call an Uber, period. But, like, I am not criticizing someone for having a drink with friends, for partying, or for making a horrible mistake. What I'm doing is criticizing someone who clearly did not consider that some things need to be put aside for a very short period of time. And one of them is kind of living the life you would live if you weren't a football player.
Here's what, I mean, people might assume this already, but there are people or men in the NFL that don't give a you know what and go out and do what they want to do recklessly. This isn't like, all right, you've made it to the NFL, you got it all put together. No, your talent has gotten you there. You've done enough up to this point. Now it's up to you to kind of build off of that and make the right decisions. Some guys will go their whole careers moving like this and will not get caught up. Not once. I've played with dudes who are like that. Didn't get caught up not one time. Everyone knows what they're doing, but as long as you are performing on the field and you ain't been caught up, they're not going to say anything. Oh, I'm not saying that that's okay, but that's just the reality of the situation. It's not like there isn't a guy in the league right now reading a story about Sweat and who can't relate to it. They're everywhere, unfortunately.
All right, you guys, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, Cal Raleigh continued his personal vendetta against the Blue Jays as the Mariners beat Toronto 6-1 in extra innings yesterday. What's the real headline?
I wish more players on this roster had a personal vendetta against other teams. Be kind of nice. Which is why you and I have decided, and I think this is responsible and fair, to start fake fights. To go tell some players in the clubhouse tomorrow that someone from Chicago was talking that talk.
No, you just create a burner account on X and just do it that way. So a lot of people see it.
Yeah.
And it touches the masses.
Exactly.
You know, that's how we do it.
I'm going to go up and just, he said that you can't hit at all. Like he said.
Straight up.
He said you can't do anything.
None.
He said he would die before he saw you get a single strikeout. Okay, Bryce?
But what's real about Cal and this whole Toronto situation is that in 15 regular season games, he's got 9 home runs, 16 RBIs, and an OPS over 1,000 when it comes to playing against the Toronto Blue Jays. Sometimes it just works that way. For some reason, SC would come to Pullman, or we go down there, and they would smack us. But I go over 100 and have a touchdown. I don't know what it was about that game or that team, and that is who Toronto is to Cal. They are SC back in the day when they were balling. So keep it up, and Stacy, we'll get to work on our beef.
I'll try that. For anyone wondering where this personal vendetta comes from, a year ago, Raleigh hit 2 home runs in a series between Toronto and Seattle, and Toronto's manager was asked a question.
What about Cal Raleigh makes it so tough to pitch to?
He's not very tough to pitch to when you execute your pitches. You know, he's hitting 200, but it's I know he's done damage against us. And I think if you execute, you know, he's obviously got big, you know, damage potential, and he's got a lot of strikeout potential too. And when you execute your pitches, you usually get the job done.
A little bit of shade from John Schneider, though maybe he doesn't care. Not his player, not his team. Cal Raleigh, after hitting a home run in this one to get the win for the Mariners, was asked what he thought about those comments from a year ago.
Yeah, I know a lot of guys have beef with him in the league, so, his comments are surprising, and, I don't have much to say. If you don't have anything nice, I'll say it all, I guess, if you don't want it to come back on you. So, he's had a lot of beef with people in the league, and he kind of did to himself. So.
Bump, the way you saw it was like neither one of them is
wrong. Ain't nobody wrong. Skip ain't lying. My man Cal was under 200 at the time. He goes, look, you hit your spot, you give him the chase. He's going to do that. He's going to strike out. Numbers say that. Cal ain't wrong either. He goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to strike out. Watch this. I will torment your team for the rest of my professional career. Nobody is wrong here. I'm all for this. This is part of playing sports. Like I said before, I talk trash to my kids all the time. Because I go, look, you're going to get it here. You're going to get it out on the field. You got to be able to handle that and just execute. So nobody's wrong. Keep talking that talk. Cal owns real estate in Toronto.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter Ipe Mizuhara will face federal charges related to his alleged theft of now believed to be $16 million from Shohei Ohtani. What's the real headline?
If the feds think Shohei knew nothing about this, I think we can go along with it.
The federales. Where I'm from, man, you gotta what? Keep an eye on the federales, Stacy. Messing them feds, man. They're corrupt, man. Can't believe everything they're doing, but you know what? In this case, I don't care. I don't care anymore, right? Even if Shohei knew what was going on, hey, he got his fall guy. He's good to go. If Shohei didn't know what's going on, they got the guy. He's good to go. Mm-hmm. What the interpreter was doing or was rumored to be doing was shutting off the notifications on Shohei's account so he didn't see the transactions coming in. You know, every time I see a notification on my Apple Wallet pop up, I'm like, what the heck's going on? Oh, automatic charge for Fubo or something like that, right? It alerts you. So whatever the case may be, I'm starting to not care anymore because they seem like they got it figured out or they got a plan figured out, and old boy is going to get locked up.
So take a listen to some more stuff to come out of this investigation. There was a press conference earlier this morning, and then there's been a complaint filed accusing Ipe formally of bank fraud, and then we had some additional information to come from it. One of them I read earlier in the show, which is Ipe initially was reported to take $4.5 million from Ohtani. That number is actually $16 million over 2 years. Mm. Secondly, take a listen to stuff like this. This is from ESPN, Alden Gonzalez reporting on it. Investigators relied on recorded phone calls from the bank in which Mizuhara falsely identified himself as Ohtani to trick and deceive bank employees into authorizing the transfers. One transfer, the complaint outlined one specific transfer on June 20th, 2023 of $500,000. Now, I'm just going to take a step back and just say this. This man called into a bank pretending to be Shohei Ohtani and authorized a wire transfer of $500,000.
Man.
I'm sure he had Ohtani's information, enough information, clearly, for that bank.
Social.
For that, exactly.
Your routing number.
Your routing number. For that bank employee to assume that it was him. But that is still wild.
It is wild. I got a beef, though.
Yeah.
720 talking ish. It's probably because you were down 30 to USC and had to throw.
Dang.
That's still impressive, Bob. First off, they were ranked number 3, and we only lost by 3. All right, and I went for a $120 on them. Don't you come at me that way, 720.
Wow. 720. Where's 720? Colorado. Colorado. Oh, here we go. I should have.
Headline number 3.
Yeah.
The Masters are underway from Augusta National today after rain-soaked morning on the crisp Georgia lawns at Augusta National. What's the real headline?
Everyone say goodbye to Bump.
Yes.
Bye, Bump.
I will be I'll be leaving. Today, actually, my family's leaving. They're going to Whidbey Island, so I will be on my couch watching as much golf.
I bet you're so excited, actually, for them to be gone and you can watch all
actually,
of
this. I don't know what I'll do with myself. I love my family, Stacey.
Oh, right.
All right.
Right.
Wink, wink. the Masters is one of the greatest American traditions of all time. I know other countries participate in it, but it's ours. You guys, welcome to Augusta. And let's get an American to win this year. Thank you.
Tiger tees off in like 30 minutes.
You already know.
So
I know.
Bump is really going to be checked out after
Who's
that.
Who's the main front runner? Scottie Scheffler?
Scheffler. Rahm. I mean, Rory every year if he can get his dang irons.
Who would you hate to see win it all?
Sergio Garcia.
Why?
He didn't seem like he likes the other races too much at times, you know?
Oh, like races of people?
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
I don't know if he... Oh, yeah, he's in this year's field.
Yeah,
he's a plus
two. He's too over. He's too
well,
over.
He's a former champion. He gets to play whenever he wants.
What did you think I meant? Like actual 100-meter race, 200-meter race?
I don't know what I thought at first. I just like the way he's... He doesn't seem to like the other races too much. Why? Oh, no. Okay, then I'll root against him, too. But who am I rooting for? Let's see the 2024 Masters odds. Okay, so Scottie Scheffler's the odds-on favorite. Mm-hmm. I want someone more exciting. I don't want to go for the odds-on favorite, okay? I want to go for someone like...
Go Tony Finau.
Why am I going with Tony?
Because
Tony
Finau? He takes his family to every tournament. He's got a wife and, like, 5 kids.
Well, he's friends... He was at a SEAC game this year because he's friends with somebody.
Okay, I'm going Tony Finau.
Yeah.
Is it Will Tukuafu he's friends with or something?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Tony's a good guy.
That's what I'm going
and
for.
Here's
so
a,
Scotty,
here's another
Rory,
story
John.
For you.
Yeah.
He hit a hole-in-one, was backpedaling in celebration, dislocates his ankle, pops it back in, and then finishes like top 5 for the tournament.
Oh, so he's a dog. He's got that dog in him.
Got that dog.
Okay, yeah, I'm going for him. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. ESPN's Brady Henderson was asking questions of Seahawks at voluntary offseason workouts. He's coming up at 1 to tell us what he learned before then. Taking a look around the NFL, take a listen to what one former NFL MVP had to say about the best of the Seahawks defense. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Jared Goff has some issues at times with Detroit media. That's where we are starting our look around the NFL. So let's get to it. On a recent podcast appearance, Detroit's quarterback might have started something between himself and the Detroit media for what he believes to be too negative coverage of his team.
I have this like... I probably need to drop it pretty soon here because I'm going to hopefully be in Detroit for a long time. But I have this thing with our local media where, like, they almost, like, relish in negativity at times. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what gets clicks and that's what sells. But it's no longer what they need to live in. Like, right. Hey guys, like we have a good team. We've had success. Like, we can be happy about that. We can celebrate that and not have to write about how like we're constantly the underdog. Like, no, like teams are going to be gunning for us now. Like we won the division and all that. And I'm probably overthinking it in my head just because it's the chip on my shoulder and the competitor in me. But in that moment, I was just giving that guy a hard time. I actually really like him. But
what do you think about Jared saying, you know, hey, I probably should let it go? This was in Wilbo's Trading Cards podcast, by the way. And then saying, like, you know, maybe I should let it go. But Detroit media can kind of relish in the negativity at times.
Hey, Jared, welcome to Detroit, where the Pistons are garbage. Can't tell you the last time the Tigers were good. And you guys just got good. You know why they are that way? Because they're waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way the media
Mariners
feels
fans.
In Seattle with the Mariners. Like, you've just seen it so many times. So I get where Jared's coming from. But also, he needs to understand that this is just the environment that you are in. Go win a Super Bowl, and I think all that stuff stops. Easier said than done. But this ain't something that's newly developed. You just got here, Jared. These guys have been here for years. It's just PTSD. They feel like something can bad happen at any time. And y'all blowing a, what, 20-point lead in the NFC Championship game.
Was something bad that
was
happened.
Was something bad. So it is what it
That's
is.
That's such a perfect way to say it. It's never, anytime I think of like a negative coverage of thing, there have been athletes or coaches or people in sports that I have personally disliked. There have never been like local athletes, people in sports that I personally disliked. But part of working in sports media is that you're going to be critical of things. If the Seahawks have a team that's underperforming, we're going to say, hey, you know, like, I don't know what's up with this guy, but he's not really doing his job. Or like, hey, this guy's got to do this or whatever. It's never personal. Criticism is criticism. Now, there are people that confuse. They'll say personal, hurtful things, and then they'll be like, oh, it's just being critical. That's not what this is. Saying like, hey, the Lions, you know, this would be prior to last season, but the Lions defense needs to be better is not personal.
No.
Now, and then they went and improved that, and they went to the NFC, or not the, did they go to the conference game?
Yeah.
Yes. And it was amazing. I think that you summed it up perfectly. He is talking about a media landscape that has experienced a lot of pain and has covered a lot of bad teams and a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna be distrustful, and they're gonna be questioning that it in a way that like other teams are. And by the way, just by the way, Boston is a market that has seen a ton of success, and their media is tough.
Yeah.
That's just how it is in some places.
Yeah, you got to win every single year for us not to talk about you.
Truly, and like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, Jared. Like, that's just how it's gonna be, man. You're not gonna have like, it's not PR. People aren't gonna come out and say only great things about you all the time. Most people want good things to happen to people.
I'm sure he's been praised a lot in that
I'm
media.
Sure,
too.
I'm sure. Next up, Cam Newton joined Shannon Sharpe recently on another pod, Club Shay Shay, and the two got to talking about Cam's many battles against the Legion of Boom. Now, I know you guys remember that for a time it sure felt like these two were divisional rivals. They faced off so often. Here's Cam.
You would have thought how many times the Carolina Panthers played Seattle Seahawks, they was a divisional game.
Cam gets it.
And it was some battles.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I knew the impact of the Legion of Doom or the Legion of Boom, however you want to look at it. The 12th man with Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, and
B-Wag.
Wagner, like K.J. Wright, Bruce Irvin. Like, these guys, like, they were intimidating, bro. And they wasn't trying to be their homeboys and dap you up. We'll do that after the season. Even at the end of the game, we ain't with no friendly with you, bro.
I'm going to keep it going with this one.
They're always a play away. You know, when you see that comeback from the Green Bay that year, it was just like, it would not happen to no other team. Even when we played them during our year going to the Super Bowl, we were up by like 28 points. They came back, and if it wasn't for an onside kick that we recovered, that was just that type of team.
Right? Oh, I still remember that game. I still remember it, that game against Carolina. They really should. That was a really good season for them on paper, and they should have kept it going. They just fell behind too early. But him talking about the Legion of Boom was really interesting. What stands out to you?
One, this is the best perspective you can get. He's a quarterback that played against this defense
and
was a dominant quarterback playing against a dominant defense. That's just mad respect right there, man. That lets you know the further we get away from the Legion of Boom, the more stories we hear and the more the legend just grows and grows and grows. I want to say another thing, man. I might not agree with everything that Cam Newton says, but he's putting together himself a nice little career after football when it comes to just podcasts and then getting his personality out there. I saw a video of him randomly showing up to a resort and playing catch with kids, playing football. Show some of that too. Cam's going to be a little controversial, but he'll do some great things. But no, this is the best perspective you can get, man. And for a guy who was 7'5", 280 pounds of Cam Newton saying that those guys were intimidating, this lets you know how great that defense was. I love listening to a player's perspective on great teams.
Tell me if I sound old for this. I think that so Cam, all of the Legion of Boom are all millennials, and they're right smack dab in the middle of it. They're not older millennials. They're not younger. I do think that that age group, basically kind of like early to mid 30s and then into late 20s, are kind of the last group that had an old school mentality at all about certain things. Mm-hmm. And so when he says that defense wasn't cool, they weren't dapping you up before and after the game, they weren't being friends with you, they weren't being cool with you, they hated you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I sometimes feel that I wonder if that's lost from the game. I wonder if it is. I don't know that it is. I have no idea. I don't play, but I do know that there's not a huge age gap between older Gen Z kids and, you know, where the Legion of Boom was. But there is a generational, like, culture gap in how players act sometimes.
I think the players have changed the way they act too is because they're going to be criticized all the time. Like, you can't even be mean to nobody on the football field anymore. You got to pick each other up and be nice. Old school, I'm with that old school football stuff, man. I remember playing Centennial High School, and they were in a red neighborhood, and my neighborhood was a blue neighborhood.
Gotcha.
Our schools were those colors too, right?
Yeah.
So we go over to they come to our neighborhood. You know what they do to our field? We had a grass field with our two C's painted on the field. They're kicking our logo and messing it all up. And I go, yes, I love this. Go ahead and be disrespectful because we about to you know what. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with the old school stuff, man. I'm with that.
Next up, speaking of rivalries, we finally know who the Eagles will be facing in their season opening game in Sao Paulo, Brazil. The Packers will be the road team in that one. Here's a funny thing about those two teams in particular playing at Corinthians Stadium. From Dyer Carragher, there's an informal ban on wearing the color green at that stadium. This is due to green being the color worn by Sao Paulo's bitter rivals. It's Packers versus Eagles, you guys. I don't know how many fans are going to get around that.
You couldn't pick two more green teams in the NFL.
They are simply the greenest.
Yeah, the green of all green.
Yeah. All right, you guys, we are going to stick with the NFL for a little while here through most of the show. Again, 2 weeks away from the draft. We got a couple things on deck. ESPN's Brady Henderson is going to join us at 1. He covers this Seahawks team closely, but was also at voluntary offseason workouts. So we'll talk to him about some of the things that he saw, learned, what the facility is like, what the vibe is like there with the brand new head coach. Interested in hearing about Brady and that experience behind the scenes. Before we get to any of it, though, we heard from Geno Smith for the first time since Pete Carroll was let go and Sam Howell was brought in. That's coming your way next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Curtis, you didn't want to go on your bicyclist rant on air to start this one?
Well,
you didn't want that smoke?
I'm just saying that if you want to drive in the road as though you're a car, obey the laws of traffic. You see a stop sign, you stop at it like every other car.
Yeah.
You don't just roll right on through.
Use your signals too.
Exactly. Use your arm signals.
I will back you up in this way. And this is my pet peeve with rude bicyclists. Not all bicyclists. Specifically, if you fall into the category of rude cyclist, only you guys, is when they in any way like smack your car or do anything. Mm. Like here's the deal about traveling in real life. You are going to at some point inconvenience someone else in trying to do something. So if I need to inch my way into a bike lane, like make sure no one's there and kind of like flag, oh, sorry, and inch my way into a bike lane in order to peer around traffic and make sure I can safely leave a parking spot. That's just the way that day worked out for you. It just so happened that a car needed to pull into your lane very briefly to exit a parking spot.
You know where you guys need to avoid
someone
then?
Someone slapped my car doing that.
You slap them back.
No.
Redmond.
I'm not, no.
Stay out of Redmond. Redmond is the bicycle capital of Western Washington.
I don't want to be there.
They're everywhere.
Again, there are some bicyclists that can be super rude. Super rude. And were we ranting about it in the break? Sure. Sure we were.
Well, yeah.
Did I bring it up to get Curtis people yelling at him for hating bicyclists? Sure. Sure I did.
She's trying to get you back from yesterday. Was that yesterday or the day before?
It was 2 days ago. We only had an hour show yesterday.
But you know what? You weren't wrong. I did fail French. Let's get to the latest.
And I'm not wrong here. Bicyclists can be jerks sometimes.
Let's get to the latest from Geno Smith. We heard from Geno for the very first time since Pete Carroll left and since the team brought in Sam Howell. So a lot to hear from your starting quarterback. Let's take a listen to his reaction to Pete.
That day is a day I'll probably remember forever just because of how things happened for me here. Obviously, you know, Coach Carroll, big influence on my career, helped me out a bunch when I came to this organization and, you know, really, you know, helped me thrust me into this spotlight that I'm in now. And so for me, it was kind of just a terrible moment, you know, to see someone that I love so much, you know, having to part ways with him. But, you know, that's the way of the NFL. That's the way things go. And very excited, you know, for what we have here now and just the direction we're headed in.
So, again, when I heard Pete was no longer going to be our head coach, I was shocked. And what he didn't say, though, Bump, I wonder if he was wondering.
I know what you're about to say.
He was my biggest supporter.
Mm-hmm. He was like, dang, the homie's gone.
Yeah.
All right, what am I going to do? Because remember when they came out and publicly said Geno is our guy?
Yeah.
He went to Twitter real quick and was like, praying hands, yeah. Thank you, yep. Glad to be here. Yeah, and you know what? I appreciate that about Geno because I think he understands how fragile things are in the NFL. They will get rid of you so quick. He's bounced around so many times. They gave up on him in New York after, what, two or three seasons. He didn't really get an opportunity until Pete gave him that. So he looks at the NFL differently. He looks at it as a man that has been, that's made mistakes himself, put himself in bad situations, but also have seen guys come and go. Imagine the teammates that Geno has played with over his 19 years in the league. 80% of those dudes ain't in the league no more. Mm-hmm. He has a different perspective. I think he's grateful for this moment. And I like the way he's looking at this situation. I think you're probably going to play a clip of that.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get to a bit more from Geno. This is him talking about whether or not, like you said, he has something to prove to the new coaching staff.
New coaching staff, old coaching staff, I got everything to prove. That's every day. That's the way I wake up every day. I'm competing with Sam. Hopefully, you know, I know he's competing with me. I'm going to compete my butt off. I'm competing with everybody in this building to be the best that I can be. And so I really don't approach it any other way.
I'm competing with everyone to be the best I can be. That doesn't change with a new head coach. It kind of does, though. I feel like Richard
mean?
Sherman in that cut when he's on with Salk, being out of
pocket.
It kind of does, though.
Now,
I think that Geno is the best quarterback that they have in the quarterback room right now. I think that he is a fine starter for a team and have kind of defended him at times when people have said, like, oh, he's washed, he's trash, whatever. I'd be like, he didn't have a really healthy offensive line, and he's got some really solid moments. He's a pretty solid starter. But the truth is that your biggest supporter was gone and that there was a question about whether or not that support would still be there.
You got to be worried. And, in a way, I feel Geno in that sense,
yeah.
Because when I was with the Hawks, Holmgren brought me in, and as soon as he was gone, things just changed, right? And I don't have the same relationship that I had with Holmgren that I got with Mora. I just have to do things differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I get it. Obviously, at a way smaller scale because I was not the quarterback. I was not drafted.
But Geno, the feeling is
on
the
a different
same.
Thing. But yeah, I get what he's saying because you go, that was my lifeline. If I'm having a bad day or I had a bad day, a bad practice or something, he knows me. He believes in me. He's going to give me more opportunities than the next mm-hmm. guy. But I think in this situation, Geno still has to prove himself, but this is probably the most secure he's felt in his career since he was drafted. And even when he was drafted, after that first season he put together, which wasn't really good, he felt that pressure. So I'm glad that that he still has that hunger, but I also hope that this coaching staff are doing enough for him mentally to say, look, you are our guy. Yes, we got Sam Howell. Yep, we understand all that. But and they've done that. He's our guy until he's not. I think that was enough for enough to hear from John Schneider by Geno to make him feel like, all right, I'm good. Let's get to work.
Speaking of that coaching staff, let's find out about his communication with Mike McDonald.
I've, you know, had a few phone conversations with him from the very first time he was hired. You know, we were on the phone talking and texting and, you know, in great communication. I think that's something that he wants, and I think we'll do a great job at that. It's just always, you know, communicating with one another. And, you know, from what I've seen so far, man, he's got a vision. He's got a plan. He already laid it out for us as a team, and it's our job to help him and his job to help us get there. And so right now we're just, like I said, in the beginning stages of all this. But, you know, he's when we played him last year with the Ravens, man, you could tell how his scheme worked and just how good they were as a defense last year and how they excelled as a defense. And so we know the type of scheme that he has, but also the type of leadership that he brings, the type of man that he is, and overall just, you know, being a great coach. You know, that's something we look forward to.
He's got a vision, he says, of Mike McDonald. And Bump, the follow-up question wasn't included in this clip because it would make it way too long, but he was asked, well, what's that vision? What's it mean? And as a response, Geno said, dominance is very, very important and not really letting stuff slip under the rug.
Here's the thing about this time of year and this situation. I don't buy into a lot of this stuff, Stacey. I mean, every organization that has a new head coach that is in some transitioning, now I believe in Mike McDonald and what they're trying to do, but the song and dance that goes on right now is going to be nothing but positive. I'm sure you can look at another organization in the same type of transitioning. You're not going to have the same interview verbatim, but they're going to all say the same things. Oh, he's ready to go. It's refreshing. He has a plan. Yeah. If he didn't have a plan, he wouldn't be in this position right now. So I get it. You have to have these conversations because us in the media, we're going to ask you these questions. We can ask you questions and we'll probably know what you're going to say already. But this is just part of the off-season dance that you do, especially in this situation. So, yes, of course Mike McDonald has a plan. Of course he believes in his coaches. Of course he's going to make sure that Geno is on point. Now I'm just like, I wish it was August already so I could see what this is going to look like. But yeah, I appreciate the comments, but it's, I mean, come on. We all know what they're going to say when it comes to this stuff.
I have a plan too. Do you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
It's to bring on ESPN's Brady Henderson so that he can actually tell us what's going on behind the scenes and what he's seen. That's coming up next.